Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again. Unbelievable. Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake. A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Episode 65 of TLR. I haven't called it TLR in a while, Mike.
Spicing it up.
2020. The last round, 65 episodes of in-studio episodes. So, because some people get confused and look at our show listings, and they're because we're like technically at like 70-something, but that's because of the bonus shows that we do when we're at events.
Exactly.
So... if you're getting confused about that, like, what? They have, like, 75 episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that stuff. We're talking about in-studio episodes, and we label those as bonus shows. So that way we can kind of clear up the confusion. But it's actually a holiday over here. Kind of a holiday. It is a holiday, but some people don't get it off over here in the States. Martin Luther King. Who's the equivalent to Martin Luther King over there in England, Mike?
I don't think we have one, not like that.
Anybody close?
No, don't think so.
What about your guys' new guy, Boris?
I wouldn't call him, no, I wouldn't say he's anything like Martin Luther King, unfortunately.
Not yet. But let's jump right into it because this is a very, very surprising outcome.
Is 2020 going to be like 2019?
You know what? I think it might be crazier. For this past Saturday, the 18th of January, from the Leah Kouris Center. I don't know why, but I just like saying that word. In Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love, on Fox, Julian Williams loses his essentially recently captured unified 154-pound world titles to Jason Rosario, and I mean, I would think it was an upset, right? Because I think Williams was, I think, the 33-1 favorite in a lot of bookies.
Yeah, I was just about to say the same thing. In terms of the betting odds, definitely a favorite, but kind of like we touched on last week is, you know, I thought Julian Williams was going to win, but I didn't think Rosario was going to, he wasn't one of those guys that was just there to make the match, you know, ready for the Jarrett Hurd. He'd come up the hard way, he'd fought like a few, you know, notable names. You know, he deserved to be there. And like on the night, you know, he, like he said afterwards, as soon as he announced that he was having a 16-week camp, he's like, I've got it. You know, this is mine. He went in there thinking and knowing that he was going to win.
16-week camp.
He just said that he was going to get in there. He knew he was going to be too big, too strong for Julian Williams. And something I thought was interesting was I was listening to, I think it was the Showtime podcast last week, and I had Breadman on there, you know, Stephen Edwards, Julian Williams' coach, and he said that he'd actually looked at Jason Rosario as a sparring partner.
What?
When they were going to do the rematch with Jarrett Hurd, because he said that he was a big, strong opponent, very similar to Jarrett Hurd.
Right.
And it was actually Julian Williams' team, I believe, that reached out to Rosario for this fight.
Wow.
Because he was, I think, you know, they were thinking he would be a nice little, you know, kind of pre-opponent before fighting Jarrett Hurd in the rematch later down the line. So whether he overlooked him, I don't know, because when you listen to, you know, Stephen Edwards talk, he's very knowledgeable, very down-to-earth guy.
Yeah, and I don't think
he's... yeah, exactly. I don't think he's the sort of person that would have, you know, looked past Rosario.
I mean...
it was just all wrong on the night, though.
Yeah, I'm still surprised. Yeah. Like, I caught, like, the tail end of it. Because somebody had texted me, like, during the first couple rounds, like, hey, you know, Williams is actually getting, he's getting kind of worked. And I was like, what? So I kind of, I popped it on my phone. And so I caught the stoppage. I mean, some people, when I saw it and then I looked at it again next couple times, obviously, I think it was a good stoppage. There were some people, obviously, who felt, especially because, like, oh, well, he was the champ. You got to give him a chance and stuff like that. Like, I don't necessarily agree with that whole, like, oh, you got to take it from the champ and all that stuff. I've never really agreed with that notion.
No, I totally agree. I watched it and I was kind of like, he was just getting teed off on. He'd been dropped. He got up. He was just taking shots to the head and like his hands were down. He wasn't moving. He wasn't like firing back. And I thought the referee jumped in. And I thought one of the very notable things for that is Julian Williams just stood there and was just kind of in shock. He didn't like turn to the referee and was like, what the hell are you doing, ref? You know, Julian Williams didn't.
I think he mouthed like, what? Like he looked to his corner. He said, what? But it wasn't like emphatic.
But I think it was, I don't know if it, I think it was maybe just the shock of like looking around like, oh my God, like I've lost. You know, like as in, I don't think it was necessarily what the referee did because in my eyes, he was just getting beat and out, live to fight another day. Yeah. I understand the fact of, you know, if he wasn't taking big clean shots, but he was taking multiple shots to the head where he wasn't firing back. His hands were down. There was no movement like he was actually trying to dodge the shots. He was just kind of covering up and just taking them.
Yeah.
Live to fight another day. All right, he's in his backyard. You know, he was the champion. But it's not like it was. He got knocked down once and the referee was just like, that's enough. That's enough. Off you go. He looked kind of out on his feet, in my opinion. And there's a rematch written into it. He can come back. Have another camp. Clear his head. Come back. You know, different tactics because that obviously didn't work. Rosario was just the bigger, stronger guy, and he knew that just eventually his punches were just going to take its toll on Williams and grind him down, and that's pretty much what happened.
Was there a post-fight press conference for this fight?
I didn't watch it because there were so many fights going on that
night.
Yeah,
you're right. But McGregor like, I want to see if J-Rock said anything about, you know, like, hey, you know, like, and we had a bad camp, or my camp, I hurt my foot or something. You know, if there was any type of excuse.
The only one I did see was the one that was in ring. And I thought he was very respectful. He just started to turn around and say, you know, he was the better guy on the night.
Yeah.
Which in terms of, you know, when you hear a lot of stuff that boxers say, I respect that. I thought that was very big of him just to turn around and be like, hey, you know what? There's a rematch clause. We're gonna use it. And then he was the better man on the night. I thought that was very big of him.
Yeah, I always think that's a solid route to go. And then People get mad, especially, you know, obviously the more high profile you are, the more scrutiny you're going to get. Like, for example, really quick segue or really quick on the side, when AJ lost to Ruiz, everybody had all these theories, you know, what happened. He got knocked down in sparring. And he, for the longest time, he said, like, no, he would just beat me. Like, there's nothing wrong. He's like, I just got beat. But, like, so I appreciate that. Like, don't give me any, like, even if there was something, but, like, nobody knows about it, just keep it under wraps.
Because once you've lost, even if it is true, it's like, oh, here we go. Here come the excuses.
Yeah, it's like,
people
come
are just,
on.
You're like, no one believes you. You know, and you're not obviously not going to reveal it before the fight.
Yeah.
Obviously, because, you know, medical reasons and stuff like that. So when you actually reveal it afterwards, like, hey, you know what? I had the flu for 2 weeks leading up to the fight. I couldn't do any road work. I couldn't do sparring or whatever. Then people are like, here we go. Here come the excuses just because you lost your title.
So the fight was stopped in the fifth, right? Was it the fifth round?
Mm-hmm.
At the 1 minute and 37 second mark. J-Rock was against the ropes. I mean, from people who saw it. And Rosario was just teeing off on him. He was getting hit. J-Rock was getting hit. And, you know, like you said earlier, he was dropped earlier, you know. So I think the knockdown earlier also reinforces that stoppage, you know. So, like, this whole, like, oh, he's not just a champ. He's a unified champ and stuff. I mean, like, look, I mean, yeah, it was for two titles, which is, you know, great for Rosario. You know, great for J-Rock, obviously. Great for anybody. But, like, essentially, like, they're kind of, you know, you're fighting for one. It's not like you have to fight twice to fight to win both of them. You know what I mean?
Three if you include the IBO.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, it was included. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
They got that sanctioning fee. They got that sanctioning fee.
It's just funny because nobody seems to want to keep a hold of the titles at the 154 division. And also this weekend, which we'll preview soon, Jarrett Hurd's back. Fighting Francisco Santana.
Yeah.
So that division is very, very intriguing just because nobody seems to be able to keep hold of the titles for, you know, longer than a couple of defenses.
Well, I saw after Williams, you know, got the loss, lost his titles. I know Tony Harrison tweeted something. Some other people I saw tweeted something saying 154 is the most competitive division in boxing. Do you agree? Do you disagree? What do you think, Mike?
It's definitely one of the most intriguing divisions. You know, you got Uchalo, Lara, Hurd,
Patrick Harrison.
Harrison, obviously, the Patrick Teixeira, who just picked up the WBO recently. So it's definitely an intriguing division. It's just, you know, the mixtures of styles, the upsets that you come on. You know, Rosario's come out of nowhere and now is, you know, a unified champion. So, you know, it's definitely one to keep an eye on. And then obviously, you have like Jesse Vargas that was, you know, 154, just moved that down for 147. Austin Trout's still in and about that division. So,
I mean, what if Rosario's like the dark horse? What if he just ends up cleaning it out?
He's come up the hard way as well. You know, that's one of the things about him.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could totally see that because, like, just based on him watching him this past Saturday, just say, you know what? Like, he has a chance to be the top guy in the whole division. I mean, technically, he kind of is right now, but, like, I'm talking about, like, if he goes after, like, Hurd, if he goes after Charlo, he has a shot to beat them all.
He has because, you know, he's worked his way up. He's gone from, like, you know, the D-level opponents, C-level, B-level, all the way up to, you know, facing Julian Williams, who you obviously would class as A-level, being the, you know, the champion at the time. And I don't think he's the sort of person that's going to overlook anybody. I think, if anything, it'll just be his style. If he fighted somebody like a switched-on, focused Tony Harrison, who I would class as, you know, one of the better fighters in the division, the problem with him is once he starts to win, the showboating, he starts to get a little bit too clever and gets caught, like, you know, what happened against Charlo.
Has he always been like that, though, showboating? I feel like he was showboating when he lost his title against Charlo this last time, mostly because Charlo was, like, kind of got under his skin. Like, they kind of had that heat between them. Because because in the first fight, Harrison wasn't really like that. He was trying to take the high road, and Charlo was the one who kind of, like, pissed him off.
No, that's a good point. I don't know, maybe just that matchup, and he liked winding him up because he knew he could get under his skin.
Yeah.
But I think just at times he has those lapses, not necessarily of just showboating, but he kind of switches off in fights, you know, and ends up getting caught because he's been dropped and, you know, actually knocked out a couple of times in his career so far. But if he could just switch on for the full 36 minutes, you know, he is probably the best boxer in that division.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I don't know. I think that was a surprise to everybody. That's why, you know, these whole 33 to... Imagine somebody who put money on Rosario for this fight. Because I think I saw one. I don't know if it was a Vegas one or if it was like a William Hill, but Williams was like a 33-1 favorite.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
I saw some from Vegas, you know, after the fight that were on Twitter, people were posting, and one from Vegas was, you know, that he was 30-1.
That's insane. That's insane.
If you were in his camp, I'm sure those people in his camp probably jumped on it, like Andy Ruiz's camp and friends when he went in. So, 2020, just another year. Is it going to follow 2019 where we just had Cancio,
Andy Ruiz? I wouldn't mind it. I think 2019 was one of the best years we had in boxing.
Yeah, that's why we love it, I think.
Yeah.
That's why we love the sport, because of those upsets.
So, do you think that this rematch happens immediately?
I think so, because I don't think that Williams will want the belts to go elsewhere. You know, Williams is a tricky opponent, and if Rosario can take the belts and go elsewhere and pick a few fights, you know, Williams is going to have to work his way back up to the top. So I think he'll turn it round and obviously just go in with different type of tactics the next time around, because he's heavy-handed. I'm sure he'll want to box this time from the outside and not let Rosario plant his feet and get off.
Right. I saw somebody else tweeted after it that said that, and it was a very interesting take on Williams, because like I was like, oh, you know, that kind of makes sense. That Williams is like an intriguing fighter because he loses in spectacular fashion and he wins in spectacular fashion.
Amir Khan.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. He's kind of like Amir Khan.
Yeah, it's true.
So, but I mean, like, as a fan, you know, with that type of description, I think that's very entertaining. That's awesome. You know, like, obviously you want to win. Nobody's doubting that. But it's just like, well, if you're going to lose, like, might as well put some entertainment.
Yeah, behind. You might as well go out on your shield.
Even though you're not trying to, like, purposely entertain, it's just like, well, just that's how it is. Like, it's like Amir Khan. Like, there's just some fighters out there who they just have that. You know, I don't even know what to call it.
No, it's true. I mean, at the end of the day, we want to watch it because you want to see those Warriors go in there. You want to see a knockout. You know, it's a bloodthirsty spot. You don't want to go in there and you don't want to see someone like Klitschko when he was ruling the heavyweight division.
Jabbing everybody out.
Yeah, just jab, hug, and eventually, you know, they wear them down and maybe get the knockout. You know, you don't want to see 12 rounds of, you know, clinching and, you know, inside work. You want to see someone either go in there and knock somebody out or get knocked out.
Right.
That's the complaint with the women's division.
Right.
You know, 9 times out of 10, they all go to points.
Right. Yeah. No, you're right. Exactly. Exactly. So, you know, let's just see how this 154-pound division turns out, especially in 2019. I mean,
like, if you had to put money on now, who will have the 154 title at the end of the year?
I don't even think we know his name. I don't even think we know his name right now. You never know. I mean, I don't know. Just on the landscape that we see right now, and I guess, like we said, like, somebody else could pop up in a couple months. We don't know. I think that, I don't know. I think that Charlo might be the one who might be a little bit above the rest.
And unifies it, picks up most of the titles?
I think so. I might be wrong, but
I would love to see a Charlo Rosario fight. Very similar styles. You just kind of rely on the power, the athleticism. They're not like the slick boxer like a Tony Harrison.
Yeah. Harrison's a tough out too, though. It really is. But also on that card, the co-main event for the interim WBA Super Featherweight World title. Chris Colbert gets the 12-round unanimous decision over Jezreel Corrales by scores of 116, 111, 117, 110 twice. The fight was pretty much action all over the place. Wouldn't you agree?
It wasn't a bad fight. I thought Chris Colbert maybe could have done a little bit more at the start of the fight.
That's what I meant. It wasn't an action-packed fight.
Yeah, it was kind of, you know, slow burner. One of those ones where nobody really wanted to force the fight because I think both of them were kind of waiting for the other to try and take the lead so they could try to counter. You know, I would like to have seen Chris Colbert kind of take control of the fight, go in there a little bit more, really, because this was his first step up to, you know, a fairly big card where some of the more casual fans, you know, could have seen him, could have seen a nice knockout and be like, hey, you know what, that's a guy I want to watch in the future. On that performance, I don't know whether, you know, stepping up and facing some of the bigger names at the super featherweight, like, you, I think he may have mentioned, was it Leah Santa Cruz at the end of the fight?
Yeah.
I honestly, on that performance, don't think he would be ready.
Yeah, I could agree with that. I mean, he's got an interim world title. He's got something. You know, he's got a piece of one of the main prizes at super featherweight. You know, at 14-0, that's a pretty impressive accomplishment, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, especially for someone of his age. You know, obviously the full title holder or the super duper WBA world title holder is
get out of here.
You know, Leo Santa Cruz. I think that's maybe a little step too far. He maybe defends the interim for a little while, you know, perfects his craft and then comes back. You know, Santa Cruz isn't a big puncher, as we all know, but he throws so many, and
it's the volume.
Yeah, it's the volume, exactly like you say. Just throw so many punches.
Yeah, you have to have the stamina and all that stuff and just keep up with him. That's the thing. Like, I don't think people are afraid of his knockout power. It's just, it's the volume. Like, damn, I just have to do a bunch of cardio for this camp.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that at the minute, it's maybe a little step too far, so.
I don't know. But he has the interim, as I mentioned, WBA Super Featherweight World Title, a piece of the world title, so we'll see how that ends up. And then Corrales a couple of years ago, wasn't he with Top Rank?
I believe so.
Like, you know, or was it Golden Boy? I don't even know. It was with one of them. And they were putting him out there and then kind of putting a little bit of hype behind him, I remember. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, like, let's see where this goes. And then he kind of just faded kind of away.
Yeah, because he'd been in there with a few names like Alberto Machado in 2017. Obviously, Robinson Castellanos, who people will know,
yep,
defeated Gamboa,
yep,
years ago. So he's been in there with a few names of note. Just Rene Alvarado, another one. He actually picked up a win over Rene Alvarado back in 2013. So,
and Alvarado just got that world title, that WBA regular at 130.
So, you know, Corrales was an experienced opponent.
Yeah, that's true. And also, You know, well, since we touched on Rene Alvarado, Cancio, I don't know if we mentioned last. Did we touch about it last week? Cancio signs for Top Rank.
I don't think it had been 100% confirmed, but that was the rumor at the time, yeah.
Okay, so that's confirmed. Or, well, I don't even think it's confirmed yet.
I don't think Top Rank have announced it, but I think everyone else in the world has announced it. You know, Mike Coppingers and people like
there.
That.
It's out there already, so he's at Top Rank. And then Ray Vargas, too. The 122 Super Bantamweight. Leaves Golden Boy essentially and goes to PBC. So
the Golden Boy stable is
it's diminishing. What's going on here? But they got Teixeira, he's got the WBO. I'm sure that was a nice surprise.
But I think is he a title holder?
Yeah. But I mean, hey, you never know. Like we said, the 154 division is just kinda up it's up in the air. What if Teixeira comes out and beats everybody? You never know.
Yeah, that performance that night when I was there in Las Vegas, that was came out of nowhere. Everyone else was, you know, kind of backing his opponent to take the title that night, but he just outworked him.
Yeah, Golden Boy gets a W in a long time over Top Rank.
I think the problem is though is you know with the Golden Boy stable is they kind of come out with some odd matchmaking, would you say? And then also I think that you've got Bob Arum and Eddie Hearn, you know, topping up Top Rank and Matchroom, they come out there, the face of the promotion. You know, they'll come out there, they'll talk about their superstars, they'll talk about their rising stars, they give out that, you know, that free publicity.
Right.
They're in front of the cameras, they're in front of IFL TV constantly. Whereas, you know, Al Heyman is non-existent for the PBC, and also Oscar De La Hoya, you'll see him for a couple of months, and then he'll disappear. You won't see him for months and months and months, and then he'll come out again. But even then, he only really talks about Canelo, King Rai, Virgil Ortiz now that he's a star, but he won't be out there, you know, pumping Virgil Ortiz at the time.
No, you're right. Yeah.
Just people like that, which...
Well, I remember Eddie Hearn in our interview we had with him in Phoenix, he kind of touched on that, mostly in terms of talking about Al Heyman, because Al Heyman stays out of the public spotlight, which I can see why he does it. He kind of works behind the scenes. So in a way, like, it doesn't bother me. I'm just like, well, you know, he's just, you know, just wants to do everything behind the scenes, doesn't want the spotlight. Well, to me, that doesn't really bother me, but I could see Eddie Hearn's point, how he said, and, you know, plugging, if you want to listen to that interview, go a couple of interviews back here on the Last Round, but how Eddie Hearn put it, how he described it, he's like, yeah, you need a mouthpiece. Like, we're, you know, we signed these guys, and, like, I'm out there trying to make them as big as I can, doing all these interviews and stuff, pumping them up, marketing. He has a point, too. So I think whether you look at one side of that spectrum or the other, at least to me, I understand both sides.
I would say that the problem with the PBC is, maybe it's not really a problem, but they sign fighters that are finished. You don't really see PBC coming through with a lot of up-and-coming names that I can think of, whereas, you know, your Top Rank, Matchroom, you know, they'll pick somebody up straight out of the Olympics, or maybe somebody who was just a very good amateur.
Right.
And then, you know, they'll bleed them all the way to the top. PBC really kind of have more of the finished articles.
I can see that. I feel like that has to do more with, like, now that they're with Fox, that they signed with Fox. Obviously, you have to, I feel like with Fox, because that's it's network television, you have to, your bar for ratings for them is a lot higher in terms of, like, I think ESPN is considered cable.
Right.
And I think if from looking at it from a television perspective, network TV is a lot more scrutinized. It has a lot more rules and regulations than cable TV. So the ratings on network TV are a lot more, what's the word I'm looking for? Valued and stuff like that, if you look at it like that. So, I mean, like, I think Heyman and PBC also look at it like that from the business side, obviously. So they pick up all these guys who might be towards the tail end of their career, but they have a name.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, well, if we can put them on there, we'll get some eyeballs. Because if you pick up, like you said, like you mentioned Top Rank and those guys, like, they sign these guys at the Olympics. They kind of build them up and stuff like that, which is great. But, you know, PBC knows, like, who knows? Maybe they might be signing. Who knows? But obviously, I don't think it's as they're as busy as, like, Top Rank in those guys. I mean, from what we see. But, I mean, like, if just looking at it from a black and white perspective, if PBC signs some kid, some amateur, you know, bring him out, and then they put him on a PBC Fox card, you know, as like a co-main or something. Like, people are going to be like, who is this? Like, you know, unless they put on a spectacular performance, like some crazy knockout or something. So, I don't know. There's a business side, and then there's...
I think, I'm kind of going off subjects a bit, but I think they need to, though. They kind of put all their eggs in one basket when they tried to dominate the 147 division, probably because of Floyd, because he knew that was the money division. But slowly but surely, they're all getting older.
Right.
You know, like your Sean Porters, your Keith Thurmans, and they need to really invest in that next batch of generational superstars, unless Al Heyman's just going to get out of the business. He's just going to sell PBC. You know, is that Azufa Boxing? Is he going to just sell it to Dana White?
You know what? That's so intriguing to me. Like, the whole Dana White, PBC, Al Heyman, Mayweather connection. I think they are going to combine. I think Zuffa Boxing and PBC are going to combine and, like, going to be partners and stuff. And I honestly think that Heyman, like how Dana White said that he doesn't want to use the sanctioning body belts. You know, but he's like, no, we're not going to use those. He's like, we're going to make our own. Like, PBC World Champ, you know, whatever, or all that stuff. Like, I think Heyman's on board with that too. He's just not telling the people in the know. He's not telling, like, the presidents of the sanctioning bodies and stuff, because he needs them right now, you know? But I honestly think Heyman's on that same boat. I think him and Dana White are on the same page because they've talked, and Mayweather and all that stuff. They're just like, yeah. They're like, we'll just, you know, when we get to that point, then I can say, boom, all right, you're out of here. But right now, like, I mean, you don't think some of these, like, sanctioning body people have, like, kind of asked Heyman or some of the PBC brass, like, hey, you know, what's going on here? Like, you know, like, are you guys with Dana White? Are you guys doing business with him? And they're just like, no, like, you know, he's been talking to us, we're talking, but, like, you know, don't worry about it. But I think, because, I mean, it makes sense. Heyman needs them right now, you know?
No, he does. Dana did an interview, I think it may have been with Adam Cattrall on the weekend. He was out there.
I didn't watch it, but I saw a piece of it.
Yeah, he was kind of covering, obviously, the UFC
BT Sport,
fight.
BT Sport?
Yeah, exactly. He was covering it for BT Sport. And he kind of touched on it briefly. Like, hey, you know, like, I know you made the announcement that October last year you were going to come out with, like, Zuffa Boxing was going to be announced. You had kind of like a chair that was going to overlook the, you know, the whole business for you. And he just sort of touched on that, you know, it's obviously been delayed. It's still in the pipeline. You know, it's not going to be like a 1-2 year thing. You know, he's in it for the long run.
That's crazy.
So he didn't want to rush it.
Yeah.
And he was sort of saying, you know, it's going to take, you know, a good 5 to 10 years to build it up to exactly where he wants to be. Like, the dominance, I guess, he kind of compared it to what happened to the UFC. If you look back at, you know, when the UFC started, they could only get it in a couple of states. And now, you know, the pay-per-view in England, the pay-per-view in Australia, the pay-per-view in the US. So he was saying it's a slow process, but it's still going ahead. So that's intriguing to see.
I think, I'm telling you, when he drops the news of whatever he's doing and all that stuff, like, I think it's going to be huge.
He knows what he's doing. His first love was boxing.
Oh, yeah, he knows.
Yeah, so it's going to be... And the amount of power he's got, you know, he's going to be another one like we just touched on. He's the face of the UFC.
Yeah.
So he's going to be the face of the boxing, like Eddie Hearn, like Bob Arum.
Yeah.
And he talks well.
Oh, yeah. He knows what he's doing.
So, but the only problem is, I can see, is the UFC fighters don't get paid anywhere near what the boxers do.
But I think that's why they're treading so lightly with that too, also, mm-hmm. which I understand. You know, I completely understand that justification. You know, it's not like UFC fighters still get paid chump change. Like, they're still making a ton of money. You know?
Thanks to Conor McGregor, though. He's who kind of forced their hand.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. I mean, they're still making a ton of money. I mean, they're not making, like, obviously there's some boxers who, you know, have names, or they might have a title, a world title, but they don't have, like, the name recognition that, like, a certain UFC fighter has, but they're making more money in boxing. Do you know what I mean? If that makes sense. I mean, I think that's why they're trading lightly as well, because of the whole money situation. And, like, people are like, oh, you know, like, I wouldn't want to sign with Dana White, you know, because I'm making more money on my own or over here with so-and-so. But, I mean, like, you don't think, like you said, Dana White is powerful. He's a smart guy. He knows what he's doing. You don't think he's had this conversation with Al Heyman, you know, Mayweather and all this stuff, like, about, like, money. And they told him, like, hey, you know what, like, we would have to kind of, you know, pay him a little bit more, or at least, I mean, I'm sure there's been talks there. If there'd be stupid not to have any talks about that.
No, I'm sure
that's an issue.
Yeah, I'm sure they would have done, because I'm sure, you know, if they come out and they start paying boxers really, really well, I'm sure the people in the UFC are going to turn around and be like, well, you know, you're the chairman of this and that business, and why are they getting paid so well and why are we getting paid so little? And I thought it was intriguing. Did you see yesterday that Clarissa Shields announced that she got paid $300,000 for that, the title fight she had against...
this last one?
Yeah, Ivana Habazin. That's not... she was a three-weight... She became a three-weight world champion.
Well, yeah.
And she got $300K.
I'm not surprised about that.
No, no, neither am I. I just, you know, she announced it as if to say, you know, that's chump change for what she's doing.
I mean, like, it's ratings at the end of the day. It's like, there's not, we're not, I don't think anybody's saying, well, obviously there's detractors out there, but like, we're not saying that it's because she's like a woman or a man. Like, if a man with that situation, like, it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's not it. Like, it's just, like, it's hard to pay somebody, you know, a more of amount of money when, like, you know, like, you're not going to make it on the back end, the profit.
Exactly.
You know, you have to be able, like, you know, how are you going to sustain your business or your promotion or something? Like, you don't have the reserve cash, like, let's just say, like, a DAZN or, like, an Eddie Hearn. Like, how many times has Eddie Hearn come on and done interviews where he says, like, oh, yeah, we lost money on that event. You know, we lost money on that event. But he's like, you know, but we're hoping to make it back with AJ Ruiz or this or that, you know, like, but they can afford to do that because they have the money reserve in, like, that he has to play with and he has to use and stuff like that. So, like, you know, they can afford to take those risks. But I mean, like, I don't know. I would love to see, like, a conversation between, like, a Clarissa Shields and, like, a Ronda Rousey in terms of, like, the business perspective. Like, put them up there, have somebody interview them, or even interview them separately, but just ask them the same questions and see what they think.
Like, I would like to. Obviously, the pay-per-view numbers that get released, you never know how real they are. You don't know whether, you know, I'm sure they get pumped up slightly. They'll round it up to the nearest number just to make them sound bigger. So it'd be interesting, because she seems to think that she's this crossover, super generational pay-per-view star. I would like to see her headline a card, and then it gets something like 30,000 pay-per-view numbers.
Even that's a lot.
Just to kind of get her to, you know, kind of, you know, realize that she's not the superstar that she seems to think she is. I'm sure people around her keep telling her she is. But
I think there's no arguing that she's arguably arguably she is the biggest name in female boxing at the moment.
Yeah, especially over here, like her or Katie Taylor. I'm sure Katie Taylor's huge in the UK.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think there's anything arguing that.
No.
You know?
Cecilia Brekker's probably on the other side of Europe because she's been a world champion for, what, like 10 years?
Yeah. But I think even Brekker's, like, even at her, when she was being active, had, you know, whatever, doing all her thing and stuff, like, I think Clarissa Shields surpassed her a long time ago in terms of name recognition.
Especially with having the Netflix documentary. I'm sure that...
Yeah.
You know, I remember watching that and then kind of realizing who she was. You know, I knew from the Olympics, but that came out even, I think, before she turned pro.
Right. So, I mean, like, this whole money, $300,000, I get it. Like, you know, she throws it out there to kind of fit the narrative, to get people to write about it, report about it and stuff like that, and get some, you know, public pressure. I mean, that happens. That happens in the world. I understand that. But, you know... I hope she gets paid what she wants, you know? I mean, I do, but, like, I think, you know, she's an Olympian. She's a two-time gold medalist. Like, she's a unified world champion. She's obviously at the top of the sport in her respective, you know, sport. You know, like, I hope that she hits it where she becomes entertaining and she becomes like a Ronda Rousey and people tune in to watch her. You know, maybe she's knocking girls out or this and that. Like, I hope it goes that route, because it's not only good for female boxing, it's good for boxing, you know, regardless. And I hope she makes her $1 million or whatever she wants to make, because she's like, yeah, like, I mean, you know, I don't know. But this whole, like, oh, you know, like, oh, I only made this, I should be paid $5 million or something like that. Like, well, there's no promoter who's going to really pay that, you know, unless, like, they put you on a card that's already going to make a ton of money anyways. And then maybe they might be able to share some of that pie and kind of like, oh, yeah, we paid so-and-so really well and stuff like that. But, like, Well, it's because it was headlined by like a McGregor Pacquiao, you know? So the money's already there. The pot's already there. Like, it's a business at the end of the day. And like, people hate it. Like, oh, boxing is being treated like a business and stuff like that. I mean, for the last 20, 25 years, it's been like that, essentially. It's always been like that, but like, especially for like the last 20 years or so.
It is a business, essentially. The people aren't just going to pay the fighters just to fight and just so they can lose money.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a very wise decision just be like, hey, you know what? I'm going to pay you $5 million, you $5 million. I don't care how many people watch, how many people attend.
Right.
And I'm just going to lose $10 million.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? We'll see how it pans out. But, you know, good luck to them. You know, $300,000 is still a lot of money. You know, I'm sure there's people listening to you like, 300K is a lot of money. It is a lot of money.
There's male fighters. I'm sure male champions that don't earn that.
Oh, no. I mean, what did they say? Ryan Garcia just signed his little new deal. Like, I think, what is he making, 250K?
I think 250, yeah.
250K, like, that's still a ton of money. But, I mean, like, you don't think Ryan Garcia is getting more ratings and obviously his social media following and his follow, like, you don't think, like, he's moving the needle a lot more?
Ryan Garcia's following is multiple times larger,
you know,
than Chris Shields.
And he's technically making less, reportedly, you know? Yeah. I mean, you know, there's two sides to the spectrum here. Got to think about it. Going on to previews this weekend from the Turning Stone Resort and Casino in Verona, New York. Is the Turning Stone, is that an Indian reservation or Native American reservation?
With a name like that, I would think so.
On ESPN Plus, Eleider Alvarez, 25-1, gets the 7th round KO over Michael Seals. This was for the vacant WBC Continental Americas and vacant WBO Intercontinental Light Heavyweight titles. What? This was a unification fight? What?
For two.
This was a unification.
I don't know. Two lesser titles. Good fight. You could see from the off that this probably wasn't going to go 12 rounds. Two heavy-handed punches. Alvarez hasn't fought since his February 2019 defeat to Sergey Kovalev. Was scheduled to come back. Suffered an Achilles injury and then obviously took time off and came back pretty much a year later. Good fight. Alvarez just caught him with probably the KO of the year so far. Big right hand in the seventh. They both threw right hands. Alvarez just got there first.
I still can't get over the whole double title thing. You know, the whole... Like, imagine if, like, he... Like, in his post-fight, they announce him and, you know, or it's a decision win. And the announcer's like, and new unified... And then Alvarez gets on the mic and he's just like, I did it. Unified champion.
Of the continental area?
Yeah. I don't know. I just think that's funny. Because, I mean, like, I know there's been times, obviously, where we've seen, or it happens all the time, where there's, like, multiple regional lesser titles on the line and stuff like that. So, but this was on technically on ESPN, on the app. You know, it's on a big platform. I don't know. I just think it's kind of funny. But, so Alvarez, this pretty much puts him in line, like you said, kind of touched on, for a world title fight at 175 pounds.
The talking is Alvarez will now fight former title holder Joe Smith, who beat Jesse Hart last week for the vacant WBO light heavyweight title, the belt that was most recently held by Canelo Alvarez, who vacated it 6 weeks after beating Sergey Kovalev.
I think everybody knew that was coming.
The kind of person who was rumored to be fighting for that was Gilberto Zerdo Ramirez, but who seems to be having issues with Top Rank and seems to be trying to get out of his contract with them.
Really quick, touching on that, since Ramirez is obviously in the same division, 175 and stuff like that.
They're all Top Rank guys.
Like, oh yeah, technically, yeah, that's true. Do you think that, because obviously there's been reports that Ramirez is trying to get out of his Top Rank deal.
Which I think is honestly amazing. There's some of the names. That
he's 40-0.
Well, the rumor is he got offered something like $1.2 million to fight somebody that I can't remember the name though, but it was somebody that wasn't even in like the top 15. It was more like just a little warm up fight before, and he got offered $1.2 million and turned it down. And the guy's in my opinion, kind of been wrapped in cotton wool for quite a while, just kind of.
I mean, are you saying that he turned it down? Like, are you disappointed because it's so much money? Or
yeah, because if you're off.
But he's 40 and oh, Mike. Like, I think like.
But who's he fought?
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying like he turned it down, like you said. He turned down reportedly $1.2 million or whatever to fight a guy outside the top 15 or whatever he's in. And like in terms of money wise, like what are you doing? Just take the money and fight. I'm not saying that nobody understands that point of view, but I think like it'd be different if he was 20-0 in terms of 40-0 turning that down. Do you know what I mean? Like I think he's at a point where like he's obviously made a good amount of money in the fights with top rank and stuff. They've been taking care of him, but I think he's getting so much heat for his legacy. Like, you haven't fought anybody, and you're 40-0.
Yeah, and to me, it's kind of like...
I think that's admirable. I think I admire that. I was just like, you know what? He's putting his foot down. Like, and the reason why I mentioned, like, the whole, you know, he's in the kind of whatever he's doing with top rank trying to get out, because, like, it's reminiscent of Mikey Garcia, De La Hoya, Mayweather, all these guys who were top rank, and they pretty much got out of their deals.
But I believe the rumor with him is that it's his wife. His wife's now involved in trying to be his manager. Now he's earning some good money, and... His wife's the one that's kind of putting the pressure on and turning down the deals. And
where'd you see that at?
Steve Kim said it.
Oh, wow. Well, that's interesting.
But to me, like, you fought, you know, never really fought anybody you'd know. They're offering him somebody for $1.2 million. Where is he going to earn that type of money? In my opinion, like, I don't think he's as big a name as he thinks he is. I think he's kind of maybe up there because, you know, he's a Mexican light heavyweight.
And obviously, we're just speculating here, but I don't think he thinks that he's a big name. I really don't think he does.
He's getting big name money.
Well, yeah, he is. But I mean, like, that just goes back to the whole boxing, MMA pay gap and stuff like that. Like, boxing, obviously. Like, Gilberto Ramirez, just going back to my original point. Like, how many UFC fighters have a way bigger profile than a Gilberto Ramirez, and they're making, like, $600,000-$700,000? As compared to like a $1.2 million or whatever.
They might not even get that. Donald Cerrone only got $200,000. And the rest was, he made $1.8 million on the pay-per-view side. But his actual, you know.
That's crazy, huh?
$200,000 for the fight.
And they're going to make a ton of money on that. I don't know. We'll touch on that a little bit later in terms of the boxing aspect. But I don't know. I think it's, regardless of what the issue is, like the whole, his wife being the manager or something or whatever, I think, I mean, I would hope that Ramirez and his team are just like, look, man, like we're 40-0. Like, we got to fight people. And over here with top rank, like, I mean, you can fight Alvarez and stuff like that. But, like, okay, there's Bivol. He's on DAZN. Joe Smith just got a W. Who else? Kovalev.
Beterbiev. Glavesnik. The Nail.
I mean, who... Who knows?
Callum Johnson.
Or maybe Ramirez's team is just like, hey, man, like, Canelo's already shown that he wants to come up to 175. Or maybe Ramirez will force himself to go back to 168 to try to get a Canelo fight. You know? But, like, do you think that if that's the thinking in Ramirez's camp, do you think that he kind of wants to go with, like, a DAZN or, like, a Matchroom or whatever? To try to kind of get a Canelo fight, because he's like, okay, well, if I go over there and actually sign with them instead of try to make a fight like from top rank and DAZN, I might get paid more with DAZN, because if I go with them, like, sign, you know what I mean?
I don't know. The weird thing is, I don't really know exactly what his problem is. To me, if you're turning down $1.2 million
it's a competition. I think he has to know. Like, he hasn't fought anybody, so he's...
But he's getting easy money. That's why it's bothering me. I'm like, dude, you're getting $1.2 million, a lot of money to fight nobody.
Yeah,
if he was turning down $1.2 million to fight Kovalev, I'd be like, all right, he's scared of fighting big names.
No, I understand. Yeah, I agree with that. But like at 40-0, like it's a legacy thing now. Like, he's been getting heat for a couple years now.
Well, yeah, because he's been wrapped up in just...
Yeah. Like he's Jesse Hart twice, you know, even though Jesse Hart's not like...
That's probably the biggest name he's fought.
Yeah. But he's 40-0, like...
If he came out and said, like, you know, I want those big legacy fights and top rank aren't giving me, I'd be like, you know what, fair play. You know, fair play.
I mean, I honestly think that that's a part of the whole issue that's going on between him and top rank, is because maybe he's trying, like, they're offering him these guys. He's just like, what the hell? Like, you know, like, I mean, after a while, you, like, as a boxer, especially, you know, you're really into the sport, you want to prove yourself. Like, I'm sure he had a nice run. Like, he's making his good money, and he's just like, okay, like, I want to fight these big guys. Especially now that Canelo's kind of shown that he's kind of willing to go between 160 and 175. Ramirez is probably like, I'll go back down to 168 if I need to.
I think all those names that you said at the 175 division, I think all of them whip him.
Yeah. No, yeah.
I think Kovalev would, Callum Johnson. I think Bivol would, Beterbiev would, The Nail would. I think all of those guys.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, what if Ramirez goes back down to 116 and fights like a Callum Smith or something? I think that's a pretty cool fight.
I think the 175 against Canelo, the big all-Mexican on a, you know, May or September, one of those holidays, the Mexican holidays, I think would do big numbers, especially obviously over here in Southern California.
I don't know, man. That's an interesting little situation right now, though, because, you know, how long is he going to stay out of the ring?
And how many times are we going to see it?
Carl Moretti tweeted out something a couple weeks ago where he tagged, he talked about the Top Rank stable, and he tagged all the fighters that they pretty much have signed, Tyson Fury, Crawford, Lomachenko. Like, he tagged them all.
Like Carl Frampton.
Yeah, he tagged them all, and it's an impressive list. Top Rank has a crazy stable.
Yeah.
And Ramirez wasn't on there. He didn't tag Ramirez.
Oh, really?
He didn't tag Ramirez. So I thought it was interesting. I think it was Carl Moretti. It was one of the top-ranked brass. But
how often are we going to see this now, though? Like, you've seen what Ryan Garcia come out and do this. We then seen, you know, Ramirez doing it. You know?
I disagree with that. I think that Ramirez isn't on the same scale as Garcia's, like, bitching and complaining. You know?
No, he's just very childish. The way he did it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not comparing him like that. Like, I think Ramirez has this, I mean, assuming, I don't know if it's a wife or whatever, or, like, I would hope it's like a whole legacy thing. Like, he's trying to get the big fights, and they're offering him $1.2 million to fight like a guy who's like high, like outside the top 15 or something. Like, that's what I hope. I hope that's the issue he has. Like, he's like, no, I want to fight the big guys. Like, I'm come on, man, 40-0. Like, if somebody looked at that, like, oh wow, 40-0. Like, damn, he's probably fought some killers. And you look at the list, like, what? So, that's my wish. That I hope that's what it is. But, I mean, hopefully he's not kept out of the ring because this whole back and forth with Top Rank for a long time, like a Mikey Garcia, like a, you know, a Mayweather had to buy out his contract, or De La Hoya, you know, stuff like that. Like, I hope it's not this all over again. You know. Because, like, he's still obviously at an age where he can deliver some competitive fights with some people in that division. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. But also this Saturday, the 25th of January, from the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York. Bro, New York's got a lot of fights this weekend on Showtime. What? Showtime got another fight. They didn't let Fox take this one. Danny Garcia, former welterweight champion of the world. Goes up against Ivan Redkach. This is a pretty intriguing matchup. I think this is a good matchup for both of them. What do you think?
I think in terms of matchup, it's good. You know, they're both going to stand and bang, I think, in the middle of the ring. And, you know, I actually had a little look back through Danny Garcia's, you know, list of opponents and through the years. And I forgot, like, Nate Campbell, Kendall Hall, Eric Ramirez.
You know,
Amir Khan, Zab Judah.
He fought some... I know a lot of people gave him, like, a cherry picker, and they gave him all this heat, but, like, he did fight some great talent.
Well, that's that list of names there that I just reeled off. I looked back, I was like, Jesus, like, he's actually
Lucas Matisse?
Yeah, exactly, another.
And he beat him.
Yeah. So, you know, looking back on his career, he's actually fought a lot of big names. So, you know, fair play to Danny. Obviously, this was supposed to be the Errol Spence fight.
Yeah.
So... hopefully, you know, Danny gets the win. I think he will against Ivan Redkach. I think they've kind of picked it very well for Danny. So, you know, when Errol comes back, it may well just go straight back into the Danny Garcia fight and then go on forward from there, just depending on what happens with Errol Spence. But definitely probably the better fight of the weekend, the big one to watch.
This one?
I think so. I think Danny will win. I think, you know, a KO around... 6 or 7, few rounds to warm up, but I don't see it going 12 with these two. That, you know, both love just standing there and fight.
Redkach is a he's not an easy win though. I think he's going to give a fight. I mean, He's one of those Ukrainian. He was an amateur in the Ukraine where he had like 300, over 300 amateur fights. You know, I mean, like, we know these Russian fighters, you know, a lot of the time end up having a ton of amateur experience.
Mm.
So I don't think he's going to be an easy out. I mean, I think Garcia's the favorite. I don't think anybody's arguing with that, but
Redcatch, you know, last time out, knocked out former world champion Devin Alexander.
Yeah.
San Jacinto, right?
I think, yeah, right out here in Southern California. So I don't think Redcatch is, I think he's going to, he might get in his shots. I mean, I think Garcia's end up taking it, but I mean, we're talking about 2020 having more surprises and upsets than 2019. Could this be one?
I don't think so. I think, you know, I think Danny will win it as long as, you know, he comes in there, he trains fully, he's switched on. It's definitely a fight I don't think will go all 12 rounds between them. They have 39 KOs. So, should be a fan-friendly fight.
And then also on this card real quickly, Stephen Fulton, 17-0, goes up against Arnold Kigai for the IBO, your favorite world title, super bantamweight title, world title. The 25-year-old Fulton has made a rapid rise through the super bantamweight ranks. So he's from Philadelphia too. What's with all these Philadelphia fighters?
Like one of the big homes of boxing, isn't it? Philadelphia,
they're
a lot of those coming
up
through
everywhere.
Fulton, definitely a very slick, very skilled boxer, good to watch. He'll probably go 12 rounds. He doesn't have much pop. You know, only 8 KOs coming out of those 17 wins so far. I pick him to win. Good fighter. And I think, he's one of those guys that, very skilled boxer, may pick up a few world titles along the way. But unfortunately, you know, a lot of his fights are going to go 12 rounds.
Yeah, that's true. So we'll see how that turns out. And this guy Kigai, also from the Ukraine. These Russian guys, I'm telling you, they're popping up. They're taking over the sport, man. They are.
He's one of those guys that you may remember fought on the Showbox series, The New Generation.
The New Generation. It's my favorite.
And we're not talking about Jesse Vargas.
The New Generation. And also on this card, Jarrett Hurd, former unified 154-pound world champion, goes up against Francisco Chia Santana. I think this is a cool little fight. I think this is a nice little matchup.
It's a nice little matchup. It's Hurd's first fight back since losing his world championship to Julian Williams in one of the fights of the year for 2019. Well-picked opponent, I think. I think Hurd, as usual, is just going to be too big, too strong for Francisco Santana, and I think he'll...
That's what we said about J-Rock. Look what happened.
Well, Santana is not one of those fighters that's really, you know, that big. I think Hurd will really just bully him around the ring. Good picked opponent. I think Hurd will get the W, just eventually just grind him down, probably take him a few rounds, and then Hurd will, you know, maybe get in there and try and shout out Julian Williams for a rematch.
I think it's crazy that Heyman, you know, PBC tried to make J-Rock and Hurd fight, essentially, try to make Hurd and J-Rock fight pretty much within a week of each other. They are. Because, I mean, you know, the tentative plan was, okay, J-Rock beats Rosario, Hurd beats Santana, and then we make this rematch maybe in the summer, you know?
Yeah, he wanted them obviously on the same kind of schedule, so it'd be easy to make.
I think just by looking at it, I don't think anybody can dispute that. So, but now Rosario has the titles. What if Santana wins? I know you said Hurd, and I agree with that, but like, what's going on here?
Yeah,
2020.
Well, yeah, that would definitely throw a spanner into the works, as they say. I'm sure we'd see a couple of rematches down the line. It's one of those, you know, is 2020 going to turn into another 2019? We're only, what, like 3 weeks in, and we've already had a big shock.
Yeah.
I think Rosario, nobody expected that, so...
And then wrapping up the show here, you know, we touched on McGregor and stuff like that. And, you know, we apologize if you people are getting out there, our listeners are getting mad at us because, like, we're talking about MMA, UFC. But, like, McGregor is a crossover.
Crossover.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a word. Transitional Crossover. He's a crossover star. Into boxing, obviously. And he won his fight this past Saturday in Las Vegas. But the reason, obviously, we're bringing it up is because, you know, Mayweather comes back out. And even Pacquiao. Pacquiao tweeted something about, he just tweeted the Notorious.
And Sean Knucklehead. You know, he posted, I think it was either that day or over the weekend, he posted a couple of pictures of posters that people had mocked up of Pacquiao against McGregor.
Yeah, and Sean Gibbons is one of the advisors or managers to Pacquiao. He's on Pacquiao's team. And then Mayweather tweets two Photoshop posters of him against McGregor, the rematch, and then him against Khabib. And it's like, it's literally probably within like 30, 45 minutes of the fight, of McGregor's fight ending.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we all know that Mayweather likes to kind of insert himself, capitalize on the timing of stuff. So, I don't think that was surprising to anybody. But, I mean, what do you think happened? I think McGregor's going to get, I think he's gonna get one of these fights again. I think he is.
I think he will.
The money is just too crazy.
I think he will. With Floyd, you know, I've seen a few journalists sort of say that, you know, he just likes to keep his name into the mix. And that's when, you know, every time a big fight comes out, he'll post something. And, you know, he just likes to keep his name out there still, because I'm sure, you know, whilst his name is still coming out of people's mouths, he's still going to get paid in some aspect, whether it be exhibition fights in Japan, whether it be, another fight against Conor McGregor down the line. But the problem is obviously he's not getting any younger. He's now, what, like 42? Even if he goes in there against somebody like McGregor.
Right.
McGregor might just catch him. You know, just, you know, graze one, throw one over the top. Floyd's...
I mean, maybe, but, like, I think people know, regardless, even if, because Floyd's, like, older, like, McGregor's still not going to beat him.
You know? I would have thought so. But the problem is, it's just, people are going to get old eventually.
Yeah, it will, but, like, I think that's what they're trying to, like, still kind of capitalize on it right now, especially with, like, a Pacquiao. I think people know that McGregor, especially by a Pacquiao, he'll get his ass kicked in a boxing match. Mm. But whether people want to admit it or not, they're not tuning in for the competitive side of it. They're tuning in for the entertainment side of it.
Yeah, that's
why.
They're tuning in for the entertainment and the buildup. And then I think down the line is...
The fight is the buildup to it. That's what it is.
Because...
That's the event.
People still want to see Floyd, you know, put on his butt.
Well, yeah.
Because it's never happened.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And Floyd's very, very clever. And I think the only way that he would go into that fight is if he knew, you know, he's got a, you know, 90% chance of winning.
Zab Judah put him down.
It's true. Because nobody, you know, I think Floyd, he still lives off that, you know, what? Is it 50-0? Is it 51-0? Do you include the McGregor one? So, right. You know, I don't think he wants that loss.
Right.
So is he going to come back? Does he just want to keep his name in the mix? You know, Dana White has said in interviews that conversation he had with him at the basketball game was for Floyd to compete.
In it MMA?
Well, probably not MMA. It'd be like a crossover.
Yeah.
You know, some kind
Maybe in an octagon, but no kicking, no submissions. It's just boxing, but in an octagon.
That's exactly what Tyson Fury said in an interview with IFL TV.
Yeah.
He said he would do it. He would fight, you know, the winner of Stipe and Cormier.
That's crazy.
But it would be like maybe in an octagon with 4-ounce gloves, you know, no takedowns, no kicking.
That's ridiculous, man. So they would still make a ton of money off of that.
Well, that's just what he's coming to now. You're now seeing, you know, MMA stars come to boxing. You're going to see, you have seen the YouTube stars come to boxing. You know, we're just getting that crossover.
Right up your alley, Mike. YouTube stars. But
I don't know.
We'll see. 2020 is already turning into a crazy year for boxing. It's probably going to be crazier when we talk about it at the end of December. So, you know.
We'll soon see someone like, I don't know, Matt Wahlberg. He seems to be a boxing fan. He'll come in, or Justin Bieber.
You never, yeah.
Some,
I can see it.
You'll see some kind of celebrities.
DAZN's going to put up that money.
Yep.
I can see it. I can see it. But once again, guys. We appreciate you listening to episode 65 of the Last Round podcast. Thank you for checking us out every week, especially coming into the new decade with us here in 2020. So, Mike, tell them where they can follow us on the socials.
At the Last Round 12 for Twitter, and Instagram. You know, and join us next week. We'll be reviewing the Danny Garcia, Ivan Redcatch, and also looking forward to Demetrius Andrade against Luke Keeler, Tevin Farmer, Joseph Diaz, and Unified Champion Danny Roman against Murdon Akhmedmeladev.
You got it. So for my co-host, Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.